We welcome into the program our friend, author Colin Fleming. His book, Scrooge, would be the perfect Christmas gift for any friend, or maybe just for yourself. Hello there, Colin.
How's it going, Kimball?
Well, I'm all right. The COVID finally got me.
It's your first go-round?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I dodged it for a while.
You sound like a man who's had multiple tests over the years.
Well, working in... I'm losing my voice now. Working in public education, you kind of have to.
I see. Are you worried? Think you're going to pull through?
Oh yeah, I'm fine. I got the good meds. I got me some Paxlovid, and then just to be sure, I'm squirting bleach on myself and taking horse dewormer. So I think I'll be good.
You're isolated in the corner of the house, I take it.
I am indeed. Yeah, we went through this in the summer when my wife had it, and we successfully isolated her, and the rest of us didn't get it. So now it's my turn to occupy that dark little corner of the house, but it's not a bad spot. I'm getting used to it here.
Oh, I hope you feel better soon, big guy.
Well, thank you, brother. I hope you're feeling better. You were battling some stuff too.
Right, but I have a routine, and I wrote about my routine in the blog. It's old school. It's untraditional. I have about 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C, which I call scurvy in reverse, and I just start pounding water. So the problem with drinking 2 gallons of water late at night is you're in for a long night. There's not a lot of rest. Pretty much you and the bathroom and all of that sickness leaving the body. But it's a mind over matter thing, Kimball. You have to be confident.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I am no Zulu warrior at your level, but a little thing like this, it's not going to take me down.
Ah, you'll be fine.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about some holiday offerings here and some really interesting ones this week, including a very good episode of Suspense, a version of Charles Dickens' The Single Man, featuring the great, and is it possible to be great and underrated? Because I feel like Agnes Moorehead is.
I think she's underrated and overrated, depending upon which Agnes Moorehead you get. I do like that she was billed as the Queen of Suspense by the people of
Yes.
The way this usually works with Agnes Moorehead is if she stays within herself, she is a great actor. If she over-emotes and becomes histrionic, it's going to be tough to get through what Agnes Moorehead is doing. It's interesting.
Because like that Twilight Zone episode we've talked about.
Yeah, and she doesn't even speak in that. But there are speaking parts, and people have said this about, a buddy of mine has said this about The Magnificent Ambersons, that it's a lot to take, her performance in that film. And so when she was just conversational, Agnes Moorehead, as she is in this adaptation, it really works. Almost like when she's not trying at all, I guess is what it says, what it comes down to. It doesn't mean that she's not actually trying, but it comes across that way. And the other times it's like, I will be theatrical. It's like, whoa, you sure are. So this is one of 3 adaptations from Suspense of this Dickens story that was published at Christmas. And it was the Dickens Christmas story that was Doctor Who's favorite. A little bit of trivia for people when the Doctor met Dickens. But it is a shakeup of the story because normally there are 2 guys, and one guy works in a railway cutting, which is what it sounds like. It's almost like a valley. And there's a railway station where the guy is monitoring the tunnel and when the train can come and when it has to wait and that sort of thing. So it's an important job. But you're down in this chasm, which is the cutting. And so normally there's a guy, a traveler, who's in the area and he's walking up top and he hello down to the person in the employee of the railway. And he wants to come down and talk about that guy's job and everything. So it's usually 2 guys. And it's an interesting dynamic when it's 2 guys because it's this immediate friendship. There's real warmth between the 2. But this is the only adaptation I know where there's a woman. The story from 1866, so I guess we can assume we're somewhere back in that area. And it's a lot different with the woman in that role of the interviewer, traveler coming down to talk to the guy who is freaked out by certain experiences he's had in this railway cutting.
Yeah, it's an excellent version of it. So check that out, Suspense with Agnes Moorehead. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd heard an episode before of Nightbeat, but man, Frank Lovejoy, great, is Randy Stone in this episode, 5 days off for Christmas.
Yeah, it's a really cool program, and it only ran for a short period of time in the early 50s. And Randy Stone, he is a reporter for the Chicago Star, and he covers the Nightbeat. So what that means for his job is he goes out at night in search of interesting things to write about, and then he writes a story. So the radio segment is really essentially his copy. And then at the end, he always says the same thing. He goes, "Copy boy!" Like, to get it in the edition in the morning. It was like this clever sort of signage that the program had. I should say that in this episode, this Christmas episode, he's more prickly than he normally is. So this is the first you're hearing of him. He's usually not this rude. Maybe something about the season had gotten the character down, but his boss, you notice who his boss was, by the way?
It sounded like one of our old friends from Johnny Dollar.
It was billed as Bill Conrad. So it's William Conrad, Marshall Dillon himself, the boss in this. And he gives Randy 5 days off for Christmas. And he goes home to his bachelor pad, and this kid knocks on his door, and he is really rude to this kid. He puts the door in the kid's face. And then he feels bad, and he opens the door, hoping the kid's going to be there, and he's not. And later he finds out that a kid, seemingly this kid, was hit by a car and is about to die. So he thinks he's played this role in killing this kid, really. And he is just so downbeat. And it's not like this happy Christmas thing that, like, you kind of thought you were getting into when he had the whole 5 days off for the holiday. Turns out it's not the kid, but he goes to see, like, a different dying kid, and they're like, "Is that him?" And he's relieved that it's not. He's like, "Oh, that's just somebody else dying," for the most part. And there's this excellent scene at the end when he finds out where the kid lives, and he goes in, and he thinks he's going to break the news to the mother. He doesn't think that the kid is, he's going to turn up dead anyway. And it's just going to be two dead kids. And he's talking to the mom, and the kid appears out of his bedroom. And you're so happy that he's okay. But it's the cool thing about it is the kid covers for this guy being a dick. It's a really nice gesture that you don't expect at all. And it's this kind of verbal Christmas present that he gives to this man who is rude to him, who's clearly contrite now.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Up next, a really interesting, I thought a wonderful episode of Father Knows Best, the radio serial, which preceded the TV show, but still had Robert Young in it. And it was such an interesting way they went about telling the story of a Hans Christian Andersen Christmas.
They're the Andersens, different spelling, so it makes a certain amount of surname sense that they'd be doing this. And it's high-class entertainment, wouldn't you say? It's very far afield of what we might get right now, where the father, who often doesn't know best, is doing his annual Christmas story for the family. And it becomes this assimilation of fairy tales by Hans Christian Andersen, especially those that have a Christmas side to them. It's a nice blend, and it's with the family themselves all in, like, different roles and everything. I find it touching and smart and not didactic. It's not like going to school or anything like that, but the Andersen fairy tales are some of the most enlivened literature that you can read. They speak to us. They tap into timeless human truths. And so I just thought this was so well written, the way everything's blended together. And it's not something where you think, "Oh, well, I'm not really into fairy tales," because it feels current. And I don't just mean like current for the early 1950s, which is when this aired. It's something that works now. And you know what? It's not the worst idea either to get your kids in on some some literature and some Christmas literature. And this family makes that sound fun. And I think it is fun. And the reason that people don't do it isn't because it's fun. It's not fun. It's because they don't know to do it. And so here you have a family doing that same thing. Build traditions with your family. Pick things to read. And it doesn't just have to be a Christmas carol. It can be something else. It can be The Signal Man. It can be a ghost story. It can be these Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales. It can even just be getting the family together to listen to some of these old radio broadcasts that never feel old, speak to us today.
And you wrote about this on the blog, too, and I thought you made some wonderful points that what you get in some of these shows, in particular this episode of Father Knows Best, is something that's all too lacking in our world, but certainly even in our entertainments, and that's a measure of kindness.
Right, and what I said was, it takes courage to be kind, and I think that's something people don't consider, but it's certainly true, because kindness is something that comes from inside of us. It's an openness to say to someone, without using these words necessarily, I care about you, and I want you to be well, and I'm showing you that. So it's taking the inside and making it visible on the out. And we are so loath to do that in a world that's excruciatingly performative. We are so performative that we don't have connections, we don't have friendships, we have the immediate family unit, we're bunkered down, our relationships suffer, and we break down. We're broken. We don't have connections with people, even passing connections, where we show real concern and kindness, and the inside comes out. It's an act of courage now. And we've talked about this before, but everyone knows people, and everyone is likely to be a person like this, who has a side of themselves on social media where they put this out there and it's how they want things to look. And the presentation is more important, although it's not really, than the reality. So the idea that you'd have a show that is showing you kindness is itself an act of courage. I look at what the products that I see now is cowardly. I look at the attempt to drum up conflict and create villains at all costs is cowardly, because people just want to keep the focus on the out, and it's not even the out that exists. They just want to make sure that what's inside of them is not visible on that outside. So I have real admiration for kindness. Is very punk. It's very brave. It's very in-your-face rock and roll in a way, because it's a naked expression of a form of courage.
Yeah, and you're putting yourself out there, and people are willing to do that often about things that don't really matter. But to put yourself out there and to give of yourself like that, that's a risk that seemingly a lot of people don't want to take these days.
Well, look at the recipe for so much radio. What do the producers say? Create villains and controversy where none exist. And you end up with all of these radio programs that sound exactly alike, and podcasts, whatever it is, right? And it's certainly the tone, the voice that everyone has on Twitter. But a lot of those people are cowards. They couldn't even look you in the eye. They couldn't shake your hand with a firm grip. It's all just this affectation. You know what would be shocking is if you were listening to the radio and you heard someone saying something kind, people wouldn't tune that out. It would be radical. I mean, think about at the end of the Charlie Brown Christmas special, when Linus comes on the stage, it still, to me, remains the most shocking moment in the history of American television. It is this radical sequence where the lights are turned down low, and this kid who's brave enough to walk around with this blanket that he thinks he needs, and he's this philosopher, he's this brilliant little person, and he still has this human need that he's not ashamed of, and he says those words that he says, which transcend the notion of religion or anything like that. Again, it's that naked moment, and you're riveted when you watch it. People don't get this. The people responsible for, hey, we should do this kind of content, they don't get this. This is what people would respond to far more than, I guess we're doing manufactured controversy again today here on Boston Sports Radio.
Yeah, and that's why so much of what we get today is pretty disposable. Very little of this will last and stand the test of time, like even Charlie Brown has done.
People don't remember any of it the moment either they've stopped reading, or they take the earbuds out, or they shut off the television. They don't remember it immediately. It just passes over them like just an air current. They have no idea. We can't tell the difference. There's no depth of field. There's no separation. And we just become stupider and stupider and more protective of that inside. And so it just adds up to a lot of, it's like a, I'm sure I've written this in the blog recently, it's not hard to say what you're going through or how you feel or to show kindness to someone. Now, that can terrify people, and they'll move away from you because you've been real with them. But it's not actually hard to do. I find it, the idea of not doing it, so much more difficult, because then you have to live with that knowledge about how you've limited yourself. That would crush me.
Absolutely. Let's talk about a wonderful story, a very atmospheric piece. Christmas Eve on a Haunted Hulk. What a cool story this was.
I was wondering if we've talked about this before, but whatever. We'll talk about it again if we have. It's written, it came out in 1859. So Frank Cowper is the guy who wrote this, and he was a yachtsman back in the day when you could be a yachtsman. Although, I don't know, if you gave him a time machine and shipped him to 1980, would he be like, this is my music, sailing Christopher Cross. I was born in the wrong era. I've often wondered. and the story, it fizzles out. It breaks down a little bit, but the conceit is excellent. This guy is, he's going to see like his priest friend. And for the Christmas holiday out in the country, and the guy's like, oh, I have to go do some stuff. I have to go see some people. You can go duck hunting, though, if you want. The guy's like, okay, I'll go duck hunting. So he heads out into the woods, and the woods take him to this marsh. And there are all these ducks, but they're like kind of far away, and he can't get to them. And he sees this old, it's like a boat. And it's not maybe the most seaworthy, marsh-worthy boat, but he thinks they'll probably be fine. Hops in the little craft. And he's heading out into the marsh, and there's this shipwreck he discovers. So he's going to explore the shipwreck. He thinks, this is so cool. It's a shipwreck. Goes into the shipwreck from his little punt, and it turns out the punt is not tied up right. There's, like, some nail, whatever. It floats away, and he's trapped. He's embarrassed at first. He's trapped on this shipwreck, and he doesn't know how to get back. He doesn't want to freeze to death by going to the water itself. It turns so quickly into, this is embarrassing, to, I have a real problem here. This might have a terrible, terrible outcome. But then it gets worse, because not only is he marooned, it seems that there are spirits walking around, and it's this story, too, that you're going to want to read this while you're warm, because it can get awfully Pavlovian, and it's a damp, soggy, cold story where this guy is so uncomfortable and he's just trying to get through a few hours and sleep and he's down in the hold. You can get a chill off of this story, like you're bunking with this dude hearing these footsteps overhead.
Oh, yeah. And then you check your hands, too, to see if you have that stain on your own hands.
It's a bad night for him, definitely. And I think this is true to how a lot of things, how nature can be. You're out there. It's fine. Everything's under control. Then one little thing that's not so little goes awry, and you're screwed, Kimball. Think about, I wouldn't do this. These people who are out there way on their own. And I'd want to be within crawling distance to a road, even when I'm hiking. If it came to it, I could crawl the mile or whatever. But these people are way out there, and they break a leg or twist an ankle or something. How about, you see these stories all the time of people who were taking a photo of themselves and then they fall to their horrible death. I mean, it's like a daily thing. Like, seriously, I read about it this week. And so it kind of makes me think of this guy, because it's cool. Duck hunting and marsh. And I love, of course, as a man of the sea, I love the sea. But marshes are right at the top of my list. A marsh is like, oh, look, I'm such a fascinating blend of multiple ecosystems. I mean, marshes have it going on, Zulu style. So I like all that, and this guy likes all that, but then he's in quite the boggy pickle.
Finally, when I was a kid, there were a handful of artists that when you heard them, you just knew it was the Christmas season. Dean Martin was certainly one of those. And so I was very surprised to read a little bit about this album, Winter Romance, that was really the only Christmas-type album that Dean Martin ever recorded.
It was, and he didn't even put Christmas in the title. But I'm sure you enjoyed the cover. You see what you're talking about.
With the that was the, so on the Dino cover, was on top of the world then.
Yeah, so you made Rio Bravo that year too for Howard Hawks. And so on the cover, Dean Martin is hugging, embracing this hot woman, and she's all into him. But an even hotter woman is passing by, and he's giving her a look like, I like this beauty with me now, but I like you even more. Say, ladies, let me pitch you on an idea. And you know where that's going, Kimball, at the Lodge. That's going to be a warm night for old Dino. But he's a great singer. And I think people don't think that about him because they got caught up in the Rat Pack nonsense and all of that. This guy was an awesome vocalist. And he has concept albums. Speaking of Rio Bravo, when he sings, it's awesome in that. And so this is one of my favorite Christmas albums from that era, even though it's not like outright a Christmas album, but it really is. There are Christmas is mentioned throughout, and again, it's that notion of winter and everything. And it's you don't have to be into the Rat Pack. You don't have to be into martinis and tuxedos. This guy was an artful, jazzy vocalist.
And I think a pretty good actor, too, in the right role.
Oh, definitely. Rio Bravo is, I think it's one of the best films ever made. And the reason Rio Bravo works as well as it does, or rather what Rio Bravo's premise is people hanging out. It's like the ultimate hangout movie. That everything comes off the chemistry of the ensemble in Rio Bravo. Yes, there's the plot, and they're holding this guy, and his brother wants him back, and they have to. It's a high noon in reverse, in a way, and it has the Western action and throwing the vase through the window and distracting the guy so you can shoot this other guy and all of that. But ultimately, it's these guys hanging out, and Dean Martin has a lot of character to carry, if you will, in that film. He's the one with the sordid back history of the alcoholism, and this kid is in town, and Ricky Nelson, is he better than I am? And he's feeling insecure, and he's having this friendship with John Wayne that falls apart, and then he has to redeem himself. He has to do the most as an actor in that film. And like I said, I think it's one of the 15 or 20 best films ever made.
And Ricky Nelson, you mentioned him. He's terrific in that as well.
Oh, yes. Yes, everyone is. There are too few people for it to be the film it is if one of them wasn't outstanding. Mm. You wouldn't be able to make up for that shortcoming. So everyone, Walter Brennan, John Wayne, Andrew Dickinson, and of course, our friend from the Twilight Zone in so many episodes, which is the beefy guy. What's his name there in the jail? You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I do, and I can't think of his name. Claude Akins.
Right. Claude Akins from The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. Claude Akins is just one of those people where there are four or five people like this as a rule. If Claude Akins is in it, it's going to be pretty good. It's just not going to be some weak offering. So yeah, it's really strong. And those numbers, they're not filler when Dean Martin is singing and they do a couple numbers back to back and Ricky Nelson does his thing and there's Walter Brennan like with a comb in his mouth, sort of stand-in harmonica. It's all of a piece. It all works. So Dean Martin, I'm just a huge fan. And hundreds and hundreds of recordings. Bear Family has these giant boxes of his stuff. but someone who's a great, like I said, jazz style vocalist. He's someone who, Judy Garland, great singers that because of other things, people tend not to think of them as two of the very best singers of that century. Judy Garland certainly is, and Dean Martin is at that all-star level himself.
Give a listen to A Winter Romance, take a look at the cover, and ask yourself, could I ever be as cool as Dean was in 1959? I think not.
Probably not. You could. I have faith in you when you've recovered that you'll be back to your swing-tastic ways.
Glancing every which way at whatever catches my eye. Colin, wonderful to talk with you. As always, my friend, we'll do it again next week.
Okay, feel better.